Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org. Additional support comes from the Jackson Laboratory, researching the root causes of cancer and other genetic diseases, designated a cancer center by the National Cancer Institute, JAX.org.
4 years ago this month, sports fans were dismayed or shocked or perhaps not at all surprised to learn that an NBA referee, Tim Donaghy, had been supplying professional gamblers with information and betting on games he officiated. When Sean Patrick Griffin decided to write a book about Tim Donaghy and his confederates, he figured his best source might be one of the professional gamblers who was benefiting from the inside information Donaghy was providing. This led Griffin to consult with one Jimmy Baba Batista. When I had the opportunity to speak with Sean Griffin, I began the conversation by asking him to tell me a little bit about Jimmy Batista and how Griffin had come to know him.
Jimmy Batista, at least up until the time he was arrested in the NBA scandal, was a professional gambler. In particular, he was what is called a mover. The layman's way of explaining this is a mover takes big bets, those in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes a million or two, and breaks them into parcels. The idea is that no sports book, no bookmaker is ever going to take a $1 million bet, him or herself. And so somebody like Jimmy Batista's expertise was taking big bets, breaking them into small little pieces, and betting them around the world. And Batista's story is interesting and complicated because as he begins in the suburbs of Philadelphia in the 1980s, he quickly establishes himself both as a bookmaker and a bettor because he's a trusted person. He's someone you can trust with money. In that world, getting somebody to get up, go to work every day, be trusted for getting the right bets, not losing money, not stealing money, it's not something that's taken for granted. And very early on, he was considered a very trustworthy person. Interestingly, Batista was never a handicapper. He wouldn't have any better success handicapping a game than I would. And his skill was aligning himself with the best bettors in the world.
How did Jimmy Batista get connected to Tim Donaghy?
Well, their history actually goes back to Cardinal O'Hara High School, which is also in the suburbs of Philadelphia. They're technically 2 years apart in high school. Jimmy Batista is 2 years older than Donaghy. So they knew each other in high school. They also have a mutual friend, a guy whose name is Tommy Martino. He was the third conspirator in the 06-07 portion of the scandal. In any event, they knew each other in high school, but they were not themselves friends. What wound up happening, Tim Donaghy was betting on his own games as early as the end of the 02-03 NBA season. In 03, Tim Donaghy was betting with a friend of his, a guy named Jack Kincannon. Jack Kincannon is not a pro gambler. He's just a regular guy. Well, Kincannon was placing his bets with a pro gambler named Pete Ruggieri, who's also based in the suburbs of Philly. You'll notice this whole crowd is all from Delaware County, which is just outside of Philly. And when Pete Ruggieri is placing his bets, he's placing them offshore in Curacao, and the person who's getting the bets is Jimmy Batista, who can't believe that they're now getting the bets on an NBA referee's game from him.
So the beginning of that relationship between Donaghy and Batista really came when Batista was amazed that anybody was able to make bets with information provided by an NBA ref who was reffing the games they were betting on.
Exactly. And as I describe in the book, according to Batista, the way they discovered there were bets on Tim Donaghy's games was that when Jack Kincannon typically bet NBA games, he would bet $2,000 a game. And all of a sudden in 03, he starts betting $5,000 a game on certain games. And those $5,000 per game are winning at a ridiculous rate. And it doesn't take long to realize, oh my goodness, those are games Tim Donaghy's officiating. And they knew that Jack Kincannon was friends with Donaghy. So they were smart. They just simply started copying the bets that Jack Kincannon was placing.
What was the time frame during which Donaghy and Batista did business together?
In the fall of 2006, Jimmy Batista was on the outs with his wife, and as a result of that had moved in temporarily with Tommy Martino. Well, as Batista is living with Martino, Tim Donaghy is calling Martino constantly, and he's complaining about Jack and Cannon not paying on bets. As a result of which, Jimmy Batista and Tommy Martino schedule a meeting with Donaghy, and it's at that fateful meeting that Donaghy, Martino, and Batista decide that Donaghy is no longer going to bet with Jack and Cannon, that he's now going to switch to betting directly with Jimmy Batista, which is important. The important thing about pro gamblers they actually manipulate betting lines. And what I mean by that is if Batista wants to bet a favorite, he'll actually create an environment with betting strategically around the world such that instead of giving up 7 points to the underdog, he only gives up 4 points or 3 points by betting the wrong side of a proposition and watching what they call the sucker money follow the bets. So he may have invested, let's say, $30,000 on the wrong side waiting for the line to move, and now he'll bet $1 million on the other side once the line is where he wanted it. And so having direct access to Donaghy for somebody like Batista was invaluable because now he could really maximize his access to the referee.
This meeting in Philadelphia between Batista, Martino, and Donaghy, it's amazing to me that any business got done because they were all stoned out of their minds, according to your account.
Right. According to Batista, he at the time was using cocaine and prescription pills. And again, according to Batista, they actually leave the airport Marriott because they were nervous discussing this in a public place, and they wind up going to a local gas station, and Donaghy and Martino smoke a joint together while they're in the car. So ultimately what becomes the NBA betting scandal, which is, you know, one of the biggest scandals in history, that deal is actually consummated in a car with two guys getting stoned and the third already high from OxyContin and cocaine.
Jimmy Batista refers to Tim Donaghy as Elvis. Why is that?
Because he was the king.
Simple.
Batista had been betting for years, of course. And pro gamblers, if they win at a 56% rate, they're thrilled. Which, before I get to why Batista calls Donaghy Elvis, I hope for all the regular bettors out there, they realize if the pro gamblers who have statisticians working for them, who have people on their payrolls who are providing inside information and things like that, if these people are thrilled with winning 56% of the time, you and I have no chance. In any event, the reason that Batista called Donaghy the king was when they bet on Donaghy's games, they won 78% of the time, and he had never seen anything like that. And so for him, Donaghy was the king.
It would be logical to assume that Tim Donaghy would try to affect games in which he was an official if he had bet on those games, but Donaghy said that he never did that. Did you find that contention believable?
No. And by the way, neither did the FBI. When Donaghy pleaded guilty, the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office made him admit that his financial interest in the outcomes of games may have altered his on-court performance. They refused to sign his deal unless he made that admission. Now, that has not stopped him from insisting that he didn't alter game outcomes. But the feds never believed that you could have a financial interest in the outcome of a game and not have it affect your on-court performance. There are all sorts of problems with Donaghy's story once you had a chance to assess it. For instance, he claimed in the 06-07 season, which is the season that involved Batista and Martino, that he bet on 16 games he officiated and 14 that he didn't. And that, of course, is a very important contention because if it really was true that inside information alone accounted for his betting success, it wouldn't matter if he was officiating or not. There's no evidence whatsoever that supports that contention. And there's something even less sophisticated that no one caught. Donaghy said to the feds, and Batista and Martino also agree with this, that they had a code. And the code was mom and dad. Mom for home team, dad, you're going to pick the away team. Well, if there are six NBA games that night, and Tim Donaghy calls Tommy Martino to place his bet, how would he know what team to pick out of the six games being played that night if he simply said, mom? It only works if you know the game you're going to bet. And of course, the games were games Donaghy was officiating.
You write that the NBA never fully explored the betting operation in which Tim Donaghy was involved, certainly not to the extent that you have explored it. What should the league have done that it didn't do?
I love that question. Part of the reason I say that the NBA never fully investigated this, when they started their study, it was called the Pettowitz Study. An attorney in Brooklyn who was a former U.S. attorney himself, Larry Pettowitz, was hired to do this. He was formerly a white-collar crime prosecutor, and we assume that's why he was selected. That's why he thinks he was selected. When he led the study, neither Batista nor Martino nor Donaghy would speak with him, and the feds didn't speak with him, nor did they allow him access to any of the files. So from the start, the NBA study was at best superficial. So that's not their fault. With respect to the rest of the study, the only thing they really could have done was look at individual level referee call data. If they've done a thorough study, it's news to me because the limited study they did was very superficial. And since Gaming the Game came out, they've had no comments. And with respect to the betting line data and the betting records, that's unassailable. That's not he said, he said. I mean, the numbers are the numbers.
Hmm. Having researched the Donaghy case and spoken really at great length with Jimmy Batista over a period of time, do you think Donaghy was simply a rogue referee, or are other officials likely to have done or be doing what he did?
Oh, I absolutely believe Donaghy was a rogue referee. There's a ton of inside information being traded as currency among pro gamblers. They really do have sources, whether it's journalists or trainers and things like that. People who often owe debts to gamblers and bookmakers, and their way of paying the debt back isn't money. It's by giving inside information. That goes on a lot. As far as altering game outcomes, that's why these pro gamblers couldn't believe what was happening. They had never seen anything like this before.
Jimmy Batista told you at one point that it was a good thing he got caught when he did, because if he'd been able to keep operating as he'd been operating, and if the authorities had landed him somewhere later down the line, quote, it would have been the biggest sports scandal in history. Was he just celebrating his own notoriety, or was there something to that assertion?
That's another great question. I think part of it really was celebrating his notoriety, but there was a hint of truth in two respects. One, if Batista had not gone into drug rehab, and the public should know, by the way, that it wasn't the NBA or the FBI that ended this scandal. It was Batista going into drug rehab, which effectively ended this. Had someone ever gotten a wiretap on what he was doing, let alone got access to his dozen or so computers and hard drives, that would have exposed the entire infrastructure of the multi-billion dollar offshore sports betting world. That's partly what he was referring to. The other part, of course, is he knew who all of his inside sources were, especially in college. As I explain in the book, obviously the focus is on the NBA betting scandal. But going back years, Batista and certain people with whom he worked had great sources in college sports. Had somebody actually taken the time to realize what he was doing and where he was getting information, it would have been the biggest scandal. The FBI, when they first visit him, they tell him that they think that he's involved with inside information. And I think they're expecting him to deny this. And he, of course, proudly says, yeah, that's what I do. I'm pretty well known for getting inside information. I trade it. And what he told me when I was interviewing, when I referenced that exchange, he swears he had no idea what they were referring to. He didn't know that they were talking about Donaghy, because it could have been any number of things.
For me, actually, the humorous point in your book comes when an FBI agent winks at Jimmy Batista and thanks him for giving him good picks for his fantasy team.
Right, right. During one of the pretrial proceedings, Batista was sitting with young FBI agents just waiting for his turn, and one of them had asked him for his opinion on who would put up the best numbers the following year based on whatever Batista knew. And so Batista helped him form his fantasy football team, and it apparently did well. So at the next proceeding, the guy winked at him and thanked him for his picks.
Jimmy Batista, Tommy Martino, and Tim Donaghy all went to jail in late 2008. Where are they now?
All three men serve their time in prison. What I hear is that Batista is managing a fitness club. Tommy Martino is working at his brother's hair salon. Tim Donaghy is the interesting one. He's the only one I can say conclusively what he's doing because he's been so public about it. On the one hand, he is lending his services as a consultant and as a speaker about the ills of gambling addiction. And as he's doing that, he's working for an online handicapping service providing his picks.
What about the other pro sports leagues and the big-time college programs? Have they learned anything from the Donaghy scandal and all that's come from it?
Well, you would hope so. The NFL for years has had their ears to the ground, so to speak, following betting lines. I don't know what the other pro sports do. Of course, the NBA was not, we now know, and they should have been, because that really is a tip-off. The betting lines don't lie. And with modern technology, you or I can quite easily, with a mouse and a computer, can pretty well tell if something's odd. Not to mention, as I describe in detail in the book, there are some of these pro gamblers who have very, very complicated statistical analyses on refereeing crews, certain matchups. It's unbelievable. So if the pro gamblers can do that, and they're doing it for a profit, there's no reason the leagues can't do that. The problem is everybody has been so tight-lipped about what they're doing. You know, I had way more success talking to federal investigators than I did about anybody in the NBA or in Las Vegas sports books. So I can't tell you with any degree of certainty how serious people are, you know, ferreting this out.
Sean Patrick Griffin is the author of Gaming the Game, the story behind the NBA betting scandal and the gambler who made it happen. The book is published by Barricade, and the author joined me from WHYY in Philadelphia. Sean, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
My conversation with Sean Patrick Griffin will be featured on this week's program. We'll also be updating the NBA and NHL finals, of course, and I'll have a story about the recent appearance of Spain's World Cup champion soccer team in New England, where they made beating the U.S. team look easy before a record crowd. And we'll visit an outfielder in Tampa whose superheroic performance has his teammates and 10,000 fans wandering around in capes. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.